I'm Eric Rosales. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, sudden interruption. The U.S. cut short its talks for a ceasefire in Gaza. We'll tell you what happened. New information. The IDF sheds light on why one of its tanks hit the only Catholic church in Gaza. What it says went wrong. He may be the supreme pontiff, but is Pope Leo still an American citizen? What a new bill has to say. Plus, open to all, we go behind the scenes at the Vatican Museums to show you a different side of the operation. These stories and much more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much for being with us on the Feast of St. Charbel Maklouf, our top story tonight. President Donald Trump's top U.S. envoy cut short Gaza peace talks. Steve Witkoff blames Hamas for showing, quote, a lack of desire to reach a ceasefire. For the very latest, let's check in with White House correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen.
Eric, good evening to you. Steve Witkoff flew to Italy to meet with key negotiators to try to end the fighting and bring home the hostages. But tonight, for now, those efforts have fallen short.
A plume of smoke seen rising over northern Gaza today as efforts to reach a ceasefire come to a halt. President Donald Trump's special envoy writing, while the mediators have made a great effort, Hamas does not appear to be coordinated or acting in good faith. Steve Witkoff adds, it is a shame that Hamas has acted in this selfish way. A spokesman at the U.S. State Department adding,
well, look, ultimately the statement speaks for itself, but the question has never been our commitment to a ceasefire. The question has been Hamas's commitment to a ceasefire.
Israel also recalled its negotiating team after the ceasefire negotiations collapsed. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel is working to get another deal to release the hostages. Meanwhile, Palestinians surging upon a truck carrying flour, clamoring to get hold of the bags. And now four leading news organizations say their journalists in Gaza are also facing the threat of starvation. In a joint statement writing, we are desperately concerned for our journalists in Gaza, who are increasingly unable to feed themselves and their families. The statement called on Israel to allow journalists in and out of Gaza and allow adequate food supplies into the territory. One freelance journalist, along with several colleagues, started a hunger strike to draw attention to the crisis. Today, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called on President Trump to intervene and allow UN agencies to deliver food and medical aid into the Gaza Strip. Just yesterday in the briefing room, Caroline Levitt telling reporters,
but the President and Special Envoy Witkoff has made the administration's goals clear. We want this ceasefire to happen as soon as possible, and we want these hostages to be released.
Now, tomorrow, President Trump heads to Scotland. That's where his mother was born and raised, and he's got a couple of golf resorts there. And he'll be meeting with the Scottish First Minister and the UK Prime Minister. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you very much, Owen. Well, a week ago today, a Catholic church in Gaza was hit by a shell from an Israeli tank. Today, we're learning more about what exactly happened. The Israeli Defense Force recently completed its investigation. It found the church was hit due to a misfire. The strike killed three people and injured several others. Responding to the findings, the Latin Patriarch Cardinal Pizzaballa released a statement saying in part, quote, the published findings of the investigation only underscore the grave dangers of conducting military operations in the vicinity of religious and civilian sites. The findings once again highlight the vital importance of upholding the principles of international humanitarian law. And just today, Eddie Rodriguez Morel, a correspondent with EWTN Noticias team in Lima, had the chance to interview Father Gabriel Romanelli. He's the pastor of the Holy Family Catholic Church and was injured in the blast. We began by asking him about the statements from the Israeli Defense Forces.
Members of the Israeli military have apologized and insist the attack was an accident. What do you think?
They have stated that and been in contact with the Holy Father and the Nuncio. What we know is that the temple was hit, people died, and others were injured. Although errors may have occurred, this is a densely populated area. The 2.3 million residents live in 25% of the original territory, making it very crowded. What we ask and plead for is that humanitarian aid be allowed massively. People need absolutely everything. We warned families to ration supplies because we knew the situation would worsen after the ceasefire 5 months ago. Unfortunately, Since then, almost no aid has entered Gaza City, except for some exceptions.
But how are the days before the attack you suffered?
Well, for 17 days there was military activity in this area. Many explosions and bombings. So much so that inside here we try to establish routines. We start at 7 a.m. with exposition of the Blessed Sacrament in silence, what we call the prayer of the religious, with many children and youth attending. They spend an hour in silence, then we say lauds in Arabic and bless the Blessed Sacrament. After that, we had other activities, but recently suspended them because many shrapnel pieces fell and the bombings were very close. Though paradoxically, no particular bombing was going on that day. We never imagined that the church would be hit.
Do you see an end to this conflict someday?
We ask God, through the Virgin Mary, for conversion and forgiveness. For example, these 3 days we pray freely and ask everyone to do penance as Our Lady of Fatima taught. Penance, 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 plus prayer. We are a praying community and live charity because penance without patience is pointless. We are living the stations of the cross. It does not end at the tomb, but with the empty tomb in Christ's resurrection. Gaza's way of the cross, where Christ suffers in innocence, prisoners, and mothers, will also see resurrection glory.
Inside the U.S. Capitol, several arrests took place after anti-Israel protesters held a demonstration inside the Senate cafeteria. The mob of demonstrators marched inside the Dirksen Senate office building at around 12:30 today, some yelling, quote, "The Senate can't eat until Gaza eats." The arrest forced the cafeteria to be closed for a short time. The U.S. House is on recess for 6 weeks, but many lawmakers are dealing with the saga over the Jeffrey Epstein. It remains front and center for many of them. The House's chief investigative panel issued an array of subpoenas related to the Justice Department's investigation on Epstein. House Speaker Mike Johnson says Republicans want all information released.
House Republicans stand for maximum transparency and truth. We always have and we always will. We're in lockstep with President Trump and his administration on this issue. We are pushing for the release of all credible information to be released with regard to the Epstein matter.
Republicans and Democrats on the Oversight Committee issued the subpoenas, which include Justice Department files, communications by Biden administration officials, several former attorneys general, and even Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Democrats are focused on transparency and are pushing back against the corruption of Donald Trump. What is Donald Trump hiding that he won't release the Epstein files?
This is very simple. The American people simply need to know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth as it relates to this situation.
A Republican congressman warns Trump supporters are watching.
If those voters who got energized and put Trump in the White House and us in the majority become apathetic because we don't follow up on this one simple small promise, then they're not going to show up in the midterms. We're going to lose the majority, and the Democrats will be in charge.
Congressman Thomas Massey is forcing a vote on a binding resolution that would force the DOJ to release documents. That vote would happen in September. A co-sign of the Massey bill says the issue isn't going away.
If you ask my staff, which I do all the time, what's the number one phone calls that we're getting, this topic is the number one reason that people call.
But to Senator John Fetterman, a Democrat, he says the Biden administration should have taken care of this issue long ago.
Under 4 years when the administration, they were in control of it and didn't release it. Now today, if they want to release it, great, that's fine. Or if not, but for me, I'm not preoccupied for those things.
And by the way, Oversight Committee Chairman Congressman James Comer also issued a subpoena to Ghislaine Maxwell, the convicted associate of Jeffrey Epstein. Maxwell is currently serving a 20-year prison sentence. Meanwhile, over in the U.S. Senate, they took a major step forward to approving the first appropriation bill. Lawmakers agreed to advance military construction and veteran affairs spending late last night. But lawmakers still have a long way to go to avoid a government shutdown. 12 appropriation bills still need to be approved before the September 30th deadline. The Senate is set to begin its August recess next week, and Senate Majority Leader John Thune has kept open the possibility of canceling the break at President Trump's request to advance his nominees. The Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, claims to have evidence of a treasonous conspiracy by top Obama administration officials to manufacture the idea that Russia interfered in the 2016 presidential election.
There is irrefutable evidence that detail how President Obama and his national security team directed the creation of an intelligence community assessment that they knew was false. They knew it would promote this contrived narrative that Russia interfered in the 2016 election to help President Trump win, selling it to the American people as though it were true. It wasn't.
The Justice Department has now formed a strike force to investigate Gabbard's accusation. Democrats on Capitol Hill claim the allegations are nothing more than a smokescreen to divert attention off of the Jeffrey Epstein files. Former President Barack Obama denies any wrongdoing and calls the entire claim bizarre. Republican Congressman Clay Higgins of Louisiana introduced a resolution calling to censor Democratic Congresswoman LaMonica McIver. You may recall the New Jersey lawmaker was indicted for allegedly obstructing Homeland Security agents at an immigration facility back in May. McIver calls the resolution ridiculous, adding, quote, Clay Higgins is a bigot who wants to be back in the news. The measure calls for McIver to be censored and removed from the House Homeland Security Committee. House Speaker Mike Johnson may have a vote on the measure when lawmakers return from recess. An investigation is underway to determine why a passenger plane carrying 48 people crashed in Russia's Far East. Everyone on board was killed, including 5 children and 6 crew members. Officials say it was preparing to land at a nearby airfield when it went down for an unknown reason. Russian news agency reported that the plane had been involved in 4 minor incidents since 2018. Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including artificial friendship. Yeah, a new study shows more teens are turning to AI for friendship. We speak to an expert and a look at Catholic teaching. And it's something a lot of people don't get to see. We'll take you behind the scenes at the Vatican Museums. Welcome back. Missouri's Attorney General Andrew Bailey is suing Planned Parenthood. The Republican filed a false advertising lawsuit saying that Planned Parenthood deceived women by saying the abortion drug mifepristone is, quote, safer than Tylenol. The Ethics and Policy Center recently found mifepristone has serious consequences in nearly 11% of cases. New numbers say the fertility rate in the United States last year dropped to an all-time low. The findings are from the Centers for Disease Control. It says that new fertility rate is 1.6 children per woman. That's a 2-decade slide. It used to be 2.1 kids per woman. The U.S. numbers are similar with fertility rates in Western European countries. Well, President Donald Trump unveiled a new plan for artificial intelligence. He says the U.S. can become a global leader. The president signed several AI executive orders last night. His plan seeks to accelerate innovation, expansion of infrastructure in the U.S., and push American-made technology as a global standard. The White House says that it will reduce federal restrictions and fast-track permits for data centers and microchip buildings, adding most of the recommendations can be ready within a year. A new study says a growing number of teenagers are turning to artificial intelligence for friendship. The report says more than 70% of teens use so-called AI companions, and they are asking ChatGPT for everything from personal advice, emotional support, and with help with everyday decision-making. One teen says AI is always available and, quote, never gets bothered with you. The study by Common Sense Media also found 31% of teens say that their conversations with AI companions are as satisfying or even more satisfying than talking to a real-life friend. And 33% say that they have discussed serious and important issues with AI rather than a person. For more on this, let's turn to Paul Snyder, a senior fellow at the Lexington Institute and expert on tech policy. Paul, great to have you with us. I got to tell you, this study is a bit disturbing. Teens are more comfortable talking with AI than a real-life person. I mean, should parents be concerned?
Well, parents should be concerned. The study points out, as you mentioned, that about a third of teenagers feel that way. But there's some very good news here, and that is that there is something much more powerful than a chatbot, and that is a loving, engaged parent who wants to talk to their child, a friend who wants to talk to another friend who's in difficulty. And rather than bemoan what the findings are here, this should be a reminder to all of us that we have to be our children's biggest supporter, their biggest advocate. We have to reach out to them with questions, with concerns, with love and with empathy at all times. We need to be their salt and light. That's what we are taught as Christians. That is much more powerful than what's going on here. But it does underscore the fact that a lot of children, and I would bet mostly those from difficult circumstances or troubled homes that, or maybe from homes that are undergoing a divorce, are unfortunately going down this path. But I would also point out that there are a number of good things in terms of personal advice or factual matters that an AI chatbot can provide to a teenager. You know, take, for example, a 15-year-old who finds out her grandmother has Alzheimer's and whose parents are hesitant to talk about it. You can use AI and the systems there to get the answer. But we always have to reach out to our kids. And this is just a reminder. This is the latest reminder of why it's important to do that and to be their primary source to come to and to be their backstop for all things.
And Paul, remind us again what the Catholic Church teaches us about artificial intelligence.
Well, the Pope Leo has had some very positive things to say about artificial intelligence. And I'll let his words from June 20th at the second annual Rome Conference on AI speak for themselves. He said, AI, especially generative AI, has opened new horizons on many levels, including enhancing research in healthcare and scientific discovery, but also raises troubling questions on its possible repercussions on humanity's openness to truth and beauty, on our distinctive ability to grasp and process reality. So the Pope is saying that AI can and should have very positive, beneficial effects, health-wise and otherwise, on our lives. But we need to be attuned to the fact that it is a tool, and those are his words on it, but it's a tool that, if it's misused, can be harmful in individual relationships. And that's why, you know, we as Christians need to use it in a positive, wholesome, uplifting manner.
Well, amen to that. Paul, thank you so much for joining us, senior fellow at the Lexington Institute and an expert on tech policy. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you again.
Well, up next on EWTN News Nightly, a sovereign and a citizen. What a new bill says about Pope Leo's American citizenship and whether or not he should pay taxes. Plus, a behind-the-scenes look into the Vatican's museums. Pope Leo XIV is not only a religious leader, but also a state leader as well. So can a sovereign of another country still be an American citizen? A new bill in the House hopes to make that clear. Republican Congressman Jeff Hurd of Colorado just introduced the Holy Sovereignty Protection Act. If passed, it would prohibit the revocation of citizenship of any American serving as pope. It also exempts the Holy Father from U.S. tax obligations. Well, the Vatican's museums house some of the most important collections of art in the world. But part of what makes it so unique, those rooms also serve as an important purpose for electing a new pope and renewing the faith. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Valentina Di Donato takes us inside.
Before the sun even rises, one man is already at work. Pasquale Testa has a very important job. He is the head custodian of the Vatican Museums. He is also a keeper of the keys. Only a select few have the honor of opening up the doors to some of the world's most renowned rooms of art.
Now we are going towards the Sistine Chapel, the most important place. And it's where the new Pope was just elected. I had the great fortune to be a part of the group of people who closed and sealed the doors, and some of the doors that are in contact with the Sistine Chapel. We had the honor and the privilege to close the doors at the start of the election of the new Pope.
One bunker holds the 2,797 keys that open the rooms and windows of the Vatican Museums. But this special box holds the most important one. It holds the key that unlocks the Sistine Chapel. Pasquale guides us through the over 4 miles of galleries that comprise an extensive collection of frescoed rooms, works of art by masters like Raphael and Michelangelo, archaeology and statues gathered by popes over the centuries. The works go beyond the aesthetic alone. Some of the Apostolic Palace's most extraordinary and artistically significant rooms are present. Like the Nicolene Chapel, situated in the heart of the Apostolic Palace, close to Raphael's Lodge, and the area where the apartments of Pope Julius II and Leo X were.
Adesso entriamo nella cappella.
This is a Nicolene Chapel. In the past, it was a private chapel of the Pope, where he would go to pray. It was right off from his bedroom. When he decided he needed to pray or give Mass, he opened the door and prayed, and if he wanted to pray privately, he could easily do that.
It also contains frescoes created by Blessed Fra Angelico. As the sun begins to rise, we get a glorious view of the Eternal City. We're on the roof of the Vatican Museums, and right behind me, you see the cupola, and right next to it is where the white smoke was seen the moment that Pope Leo was chosen. Just last year, the Vatican Museums attracted nearly 7 million pilgrims and tourists, but not just because of the art alone.
Qui c'è la storia.
Here, there is history. You can breathe history of beauty and of faith.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
How beautiful that is. Imagine being the man with the keys to the Vatican. We want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have yourself a wonderful night. Y vaya con Dios.